Today's reading is from Matthew. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a child, whom he put among them, and said, Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever becomes humble, like this child, is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever welcomes such child in my name welcomes me." The word of God for the people of God.
Well, I'm so glad to see all of you here, even with the roads being what they are. So thankful that you got out and made it. I was here Friday night for a lock-in. We had 115 middle school students here for a lock-in. And Friday night, if you were out at all, that's when we had all kinds of wrecks. Here at the church, the parking lot was literally like a skating rink. I mean, it was so slick. And so as you head out today, if you see one of our snow crew, people shoveling sidewalks, putting down salt, or the guys in the truck, just thank them for making it safe for us all to come into worship today. They don't often get much thanks and appreciation for the job they do, but just take a moment and thank them. Our story this morning begins with a letter written by a young girl named Virginia. She wrote, "Dear editor, I am 8 years old, and some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. But Papa says if you see it in the sun, then it is so. So please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus?" That letter was written by Virginia O'Hanlon. She wrote it to the New York Sun in 1897. And she's asking a question that just about all children ask. And, you know, right around 8, 9, 10 years old, that's the question that they ask. Is Santa Claus real? And her answer, her question met an answer from Mr. Francis Church, who was the editor of the Sun at the time, and his response to her has become the most reprinted editorial in history. Here's what he writes to her. He says, "Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe anything except what they see. They think nothing can be, which is not comprehensible by their little minds. But all minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him. So yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as surely as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary the world would be if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished." I love his reply to Virginia because he rightly grasps the question is not just, is there a Santa Claus? The question is, what would it be like if there were no Santa Claus? What would it be like if there were no Virginias? The question is really about faith. I mean, is it possible to believe in something, for something to be true, even if we can't see it, touch it, quantify it, measure it? Are there realities in this universe beyond that which we see and perceive with our own sight and our own intellect? That's what faith is. The Bible defines faith as the assurance of things that we cannot see, hope for things which have yet to be. Faith is a unique human capacity. It isn't a capacity that God gave to any other creature or animal on earth. Only humans have this ability to believe in what we can't see or touch or experience. I mean, it's kind of it's faith that gives us the ability to to discover new worlds. Oh, we got a little, that was kind of a nice timing with the sound effect there. Anyways, so that was kind of fun. Faith gives us the ability to discover new, to believe in possibilities. Faith is what gives us the ability to continue, even when all the odds are stacked against us. It gives us perseverance. Faith is what enables us to have relationships. Relationships with God. Here's when we need the sound effect, right? Relationships with God, but also relationships with people. Because any relationship involves trust, placing your faith in someone else and giving and receiving that trust in return. Only humans can say, I believe, and then organize our lives around that which we believe. But here's the thing about faith, is that I say it's a capacity, but as all human capacities, it can grow or shrink through life. And in particular, we find that the older we get, often our capacity for faith begins to shrink. So the disciples come to Jesus at one point, and they aren't asking a question about faith. They're really asking who's going to be greatest in the kingdom of heaven. But Jesus takes this as an opportunity to teach them about faith. And so he takes a child and places it among them and says, whoever wants to become great in the kingdom of heaven must become like this child. Why does Jesus hold up a child as this pinnacle of faith? Is it because children have this capacity for innocence and wonder and trust, which we start to lose as we get old? Why do we lose it as we get older? It's well documented, you know, in relation to Santa Claus. You see it in movies through this whole time, this whole season. Whether you're young, I don't know if your kids like The Polar Express, which is one of my kids' favorites, where it's about a little boy who can no longer hear the ringing of a bell. He doesn't sure if there's a Santa. Or my mom's favorite is The Miracle on 34th Street. How many of you watched that during the Christmas season, right? About a man who's defending Santa Claus but isn't quite sure if he's really who he says he is. See, there's something about us as we get older, as we become adults, the capacity for faith begins to shrink. And it's not just experience and skepticism. I think it has to do with peer pressure to some degree. I mean, my own daughter, Margaret, last year, when she came home from school one day, said, yeah, the kids on the bus were saying there's a Santa Claus. Is that real? And as we began to talk with her about it, we realized it wasn't just that she was afraid of putting faith in something that may not be true. It was also the fear of looking foolish, right? Of having older kids telling her, you're so stupid and naive. It's almost as if there was something embarrassing about faith. And it was almost worldly and mature to lose it, to debunk that which others believe. My point is this, is that there is a risk in having faith. There is vulnerability any time we say the words, I believe. Maybe that's what makes it hard to hold on to. This Christmas season, we're talking about traditions, right? And each week, we've kind of focused on one part of our Christmas traditions and explored what that means for us. We started off with wreaths and how they symbolize hospitality, open doors. And if you think about the Christmas story, you think about where Mary and Joseph could not find open doors. And so it's a reminder to us to open ourselves up and make room for Christ in whatever way Christ wants to enter our hearts. And then next, we talked about greeting cards. And greeting cards kind of remind us of the angels and the good news they said to the shepherds. Be not afraid, for behold, we come bearing you good news of great joy, which is for all people. So every time we send a Christmas card or, you know, wish someone Merry Christmas, we're sharing with them the joy that the angels sang about. And then last week we talked about gifts. And we remembered the gifts that the wise men made to Jesus, but even more so, we remembered the gift that God made to us. That God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. But today we get to the crux of it, which is faith. Because it's only by faith that we receive this good news that the angel said, told us about. It's only by faith that we believe that God, that Jesus is God's own son. And for that, I've chosen a stocking as a symbol of faith. You have to admit, stockings are kind of a strange custom, aren't they? Comedian Jim Gaffigan, I don't know if any of you are Jim Gaffigan fans, he say, when he talks about Christmas traditions, he says, you know, you got to admit, they sound like the kind of thing that a drunk guy would invent. You know, like, hey, we'll cut down a Christmas tree and we'll take it from outdoors and bring it into our homes, put a bunch of lights and balls on it and say, Merry Christmas. Who came up with that idea? And the same thing with stockings. Who would say, let's take our socks off and put on them all kinds of ribbons and fringes and buttons and maybe even write our names, and we'll hang them up by the chimney, and we'll believe that a man in a red suit is going to come down the chimney and fill them up on Christmas morning if we just wait for it. What a strange belief or practice that we have. And yet, as strange as it is, it's incredibly ubiquitous. I mean, across multiple countries and multiple cultures, the idea of stockings persists. In France, it's not a stocking, but in France, they actually leave out their shoes, either little homemade shoes or sometimes wooden clogs, in expectations that they'll be filled. In Germany and Scandinavia, it's not shoes, but instead boots. And they fill the boots before Santa gets there. They fill the boots with carrots and hay for the reindeer, and the carrots and hay are exchanged for candies, which Santa leaves for them. In some countries, it is candy. In some countries, it's presents. In some countries, it's fruit, the most common of which is the orange, is often left in stockings. And in many different ways, the name of the gift giver always changes. In France, it's Papa Noel. In England, it's Father Christmas. In German, Scandinavian, and Finnish, it's Christkindl, which is where we get Kris Kringle from. The name of the giver always changes, and yet there's always this belief that if we leave something out, it's going to be filled. Where does this tradition come from? Well, there's a hint, you know, in the famous poem that we all read, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." The line that involves stockings goes like this. The stockings were all hung by the chimney with care, you can say it with me, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. St. Nicholas. Who is St. Nicholas? We often talk about St. Nick as being kind of a nickname for Santa Claus, but St. Nicholas was actually a Christian saint, a man who lived around the 3rd or 4th century. He was a bishop of the church at the time when Emperor Constantine embraced Christianity and made it legal for Christians, for people to worship Christianity, and even made Christianity adopted it as the official religion of the Roman Empire. Up until then, Christians had been in hiding in various communities and places scattered throughout the Roman Empire, and suddenly they came out. And it was safe to be a Christian, and they realized that different practices and habits and beliefs had developed in each of those isolated communities. So they pulled together a council with delegates from all those communities in a place called Nicaea. And in Nicaea, they kind of wrote the first creed, the first statement or article of the Christian faith. And you can see it in our hymnal, number 880, if you ever want to flip back and read through the creeds. It's the very first one that we list in our hymnal. St. Nicholas was one of the delegates at that conference, and he affixed his name, his John Hancock, if you will, to the Nicene Creed. But that wasn't what made him a saint. What made him a saint was his incredible generosity and compassion, especially towards children. And there's many stories of St. Nicholas's his generosity and his kindness, but one of them is about a stocking. This was before he became a bishop, long before he became a saint. He was just a parish priest. And there was a man in his parish, a young father who was raising 3 daughters on his own because the mother had passed away. And this man was very poor. And he didn't have enough to provide a dowry for his 3 daughters, which meant they would never be able to marry. And he was talking to his priest about this. And so one night while the children and all the family was sleeping, St. Nicholas slipped into their home. And he found the children's socks, which were hanging by the fire in order to dry. And he took gold coins and dropped some in each stocking to leave a dowry for each of those girls so that someday their father would be able to engage them in marriage. Now, that's the story. Now, it has been told in lots of different ways. If you research the story, you find lots of variations about the age and the number of children, about what he actually left in the stockings, the socks. In some cases, it was gold coins. In other cases, gold balls. The manner in which St. Nicholas gets into the home always changes. And yet, the story is always consistent. And historians kind of say this speaks to the fact that something like this actually happened 1,700 years ago, that a man named Nicholas, who was a priest, gave a gift to a person in his parish and did it through the manner of leaving money in their stockings. And that story was then told and shared and repeated. And this is the way faith happens. I mean, think about it. Is this story about faith or generosity? Well, it's both. Because when a man asks for help, that's the question of faith. And when he receives help from Nicholas, that's an act of faith. Faith kind of grows and changes as we go through. Let me tell a modern-day story that maybe will illustrate this even better. How many of you have ever watched CBS Morning News? You're obviously not doing it now since you're here at church, but Jamelyn and I tape it because she really likes it, and I sit down with her sometimes. And they do a segment every Christmas about a guy whom we don't know who it is. They say it's anonymous, a man that they simply call the Secret Santa. If you've never seen it on CBS News, here was last year's segment about Secret Santa.
Finally tonight, a holiday tradition, Steve Hartman's rendition of a visit from, well, we don't really know. It's a secret. Here's Steve on the road.
'Twas a few weeks before Christmas. When there rose such a clatter, the people of Pittsburgh must have thought something's the matter.
Yep.
But far from it.
Well, let's roll.
Once again this year, the man in the red coat, who I know only as Secret Santa, is out doing random acts of kindness across America.
We ready?
Every year, with the help of his elves and local law enforcement, this anonymous wealthy businessman gives away about $100,000 worth of $100 bills to total strangers.
That's it.
Asking for nothing in return, except to spread the kindness.
See you, sweetie. Give a hug.
Tamika Green is a program coordinator at the YMCA. She said she wanted to use some of her money to help the kids in her after-school program.
And I promise, as soon as I get out of here, I'm going to call my job and be like, guess what?
Yeah, we'll put another couple hundred in there. And I got to quit talking to you. I'm running out of money. All right, man. We love you. You're doing great. Don't stop.
Thank you so much.
See you, babe.
Secret Santa has been doing this for about a decade, but he says he feels more needed now than ever.
This year, the time is perfect for everybody to come together, one random act of kindness at a time. Merry Christmas, babe.
Is she a Christian? Who knows?
I got to give you another 100.
A Muslim? Who cares?
All right.
All he looks for are people who seem like they could use a little caring in their lives.
Merry Christmas, babe.
In other words, anyone.
Kindness is the bridge between all people.
Merry Christmas, babe.
Kindness is the one thing that cuts through everything, regardless of your station in life.
And really, that's what he's handing out here. It's not the money. Money doesn't make people break down like this. These are the faces of people overwhelmed by something truly priceless.
It's an incredible story. They've been doing this for 10 years now. So if you go to CBS News, you can see their clips from every year. My favorite was one year, he instead of going to stores and giving out $100, he got the police in on it at a local community. And so he gave packets of $100 to every police officer and said, just go out on the road and stop people. Now you can imagine how that went, right? I mean, it's funny because the camera captures it. You know, the officer walking up to the camera, to the occupant or the driver and saying, well, hello, ma'am, how's your day? Well, it was good until you pulled me over. And then them handing the $100 and seeing the change that happens instantly as people are blessed, blown away with this random gift from a stranger. And I love how he says it in this video, that this is a time for us to come together. When you think about, and that's not the right slide, go back to what you had a second ago, that this is the time for us to come together. You know, it doesn't matter. Kindness cuts across all boundaries. It's the bridge between all people. And this story, like the story of our stocking, has a backstory. It begins in 1971 a homeless man, who wanders into a diner, Dixie Diner, in Houston, Mississippi. And this homeless man is hungry, he's starving, and so he looks, picks up a menu, he orders the most expensive, biggest meal that he can see on the menu. He has no money to pay for that meal. His intention is to dine and dash, that as soon as he eats, to slip out before the bill can get there. And the owner is a man named Ted Horn. He's the guy in the picture you see here. And he sees this man come in, and he's seen it 100 times. He can judge the character instantly. He knows what this man is about to do. But instead of shaming him and kicking him out, he comes up behind him and holds up a $20 bill and says, excuse me, sir, I think you dropped this on your way in. This homeless man, his name was Larry Summers, and he was so blown away by this gift that he made a vow. He said, if I ever have money, if I ever have the ability to help other people, that's what I'm going to do. And so he became the first Secret Santa sometime in the late 90s. Larry Summers went on, I should say this, to become a millionaire. He went on to get involved in the long distance and cable industry, laying cable. He made millions of dollars. And so starting in the 90s, every Christmas, he would set aside $100,000 in $100 bills, and he would go to random communities and pass it out to strangers just as he'd been the recipient of a $20 bill. This is a picture of Larry Summers. This is from 2006, which was the year in which he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And his friend, another friend, a businessman from Kansas City, was visiting him in the hospital. And in one of the last conversations he had with him was, you know, there in the hospital room, and he asked him, do you have any regrets about your life, about what you've done? And Larry's one regret, he said, you know, was that I haven't been able to help more people. And so his friend, who we don't know his friend's name or identity, his friend said, I'll take up your cause. I'll become the Secret Santa. And so from 2006 to now, 2016, he's continued this. For 20 years, they've been doing this work. That's over $2 million that they've handed out in $100 bills to strangers. Now, a skeptic could kind of sit back and say, you know, that's really not such a wise investment. I mean, $2 million, you could make a major impact in the world. I mean, how do you know? I mean, this has to be one of the least effective ways of giving that you can imagine. There's no judgment or discernment. I mean, what if the people just waste it? What do they spend it on? Drugs, booze? How do you know the gift is used in the right way? Well, this is the question that Steve Hartman at one point asked, and this is his what he found out. So, let's show the next one.
Although the reactions are priceless, every year he spends sometimes more than $100,000 of his own money on this.
Here's $100.
And one thing I've always wondered is it really worth it?
You don't know what these people are going to do with this money. Do you care?
No, because one of the things that I do is I do not judge.
Good thing. Because separating the naughty from nice,
and this is for you,
is definitely not his forte.
I didn't earn that.
You did earn it, because I can tell you're a good man.
A good man?
Yeah.
When was the last time you heard that?
Maybe like my mom.
30-year-old Thomas Coates is a total deadbeat, at least by most accounts, including his own.
I wish I was special.
Addicted to heroin, he recently hawked his own son's toys for drug money. That's how bad it is.
I haven't worked over a year, you know. I spent so much time in and out of treatment facilities.
Why his girlfriend hasn't left him and taken their son is a mystery, even to her.
Grab your bag.
But she is now running out of patience, which is why, the night before we met him, during yet another one of their many money fights, she suggested he try something radical.
She said, maybe you can shoot a prayer up to God real quick, you know? I know, you know, you don't really believe in him, but maybe you can start.
And so he did pray for the first time since childhood.
Take it, it's for you. Take it.
Then, out of the blue, the saint shows up, slipping hundreds into his hand. You could almost see the wheels turning. That kind of kindness from a total stranger the day after he prayed.
You're my man. See you, pal.
It was too much of a coincidence for this atheist to bear.
It's amazing.
That to me was a miracle. That was God saying, all right,
Are you heading off now?
I'm gonna show you something from here on out.
It's up to me.
After meeting Secret Santa, Thomas checked himself into a treatment facility. And although he's done it before, he says this will be the first time with a higher power at the helm.
Maybe that gave him the hope that he needs to break his addiction. And maybe that'll be the turning point that'll change his life, and maybe he won't go back. Now, wouldn't that be worth it?
Every penny. Steve Hartman, on the road, in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Isn't that powerful? It's not just a story of generosity, you see, it's a story of faith. A man who's at the end of his rope and says, if there's a God, show me. And then another man who answers by placing faith in him, telling him he's a good man when he hasn't heard those words in years. You see, the thing about a stocking is that when you hang it, it's empty. And that's the nature of faith. It's not coming before God with a stocking full of all of our accomplishments and what we've done. When we come to God, when we offer a prayer, we're empty. But we're opening ourselves up and admitting our need for grace or kindness or love or hope or encouragement and waiting patiently to be filled. That's what faith is. And I love that there's this thread that connects an act of faith by a diner owner giving someone $20 and then that becoming an answer to prayer 40 years later to a heroin addict. There's a thread that connects us and our stockings to a man 1,700 years ago who didn't know how he was going to provide for his daughters. There's threads that connect us all the way back to a woman who said yes to an angel and gave birth to a child and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger. And the beauty of Christmas is we hear this story and we join with everyone else in simply saying, I believe. And in that belief, we are filled with hope. I close with Francis Church's last words to Virginia. He said, you can open up a baby's rattle, Virginia, and you can see what makes the noise inside. But there is a veil that covers the unseen world, which not the strongest man nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived could ever tear apart. But only faith, and he adds fancy, poetry, love, and romance, only things like that can push this curtain aside and help us to view and picture the supernal beauty and love beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there is nothing else more real and abiding. Amen.